Welcome to this episode of the Security Clearance Careers Podcast, Clearedcast, your source for security clearance, intelligence community, espionage, national security, and defense contracting updates. In our exclusive interviews with intelligence community and government leaders.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Clearedcast. I am so delighted to have Dr. Gerald Auger, I'm going to call you Jerry, with me today. So he's an adjunct professor in the Department of Cyber and Computer Sciences at the Citadel. He's a content creator, which is how I came across him. So be sure to subscribe to his cybersecurity live streams that he does every day at simplycyber.io. So really, he brings information security related content to help IT or InfoSec professionals really take their career further and do it faster. So he's a cybersecurity SME, a guru of sorts, but he also spent some time supporting the defense industrial base as a contractor with a familiar name. So thanks so much for joining our podcast and sharing some of your experience with me.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% pumped to be here. Super excited to share some experiences, share some stories, maybe a couple laughs, and just have a great conversation.
Yeah, for sure. And so I teased your background a little bit, but I think it's really important for our audience, which is obviously a large portion of the cleared population, but also those just kind of trying to break into this space. So tell us a little bit about your story and how, one, you were able to break into defense, because that's one of the biggest questions I get, and maybe some reasons why you left, because you're obviously not here anymore.
Yeah, 100%. So I've been in the industry for about 20 years, but the way that it originally started, I graduated university with a computer science degree. I was a software engineer because I thought that was the only job you could get with that degree. I started working and looking. I was in Massachusetts and I was looking for work and I found like some small software gig, like an in-house, you know, business application type thing, whatever. It wasn't very rewarding. And I was doing that. And then I found out about through a family friend about work in DC. And I knew that obviously Washington, DC, the Capitol, the Pentagon, Department of Defense, like all these things are going on down there. And because of that, I started looking around through a network connection. So networking is incredibly valuable. I absolutely will not pretend that I got the job exclusively on my technical acumen. Although, I mean, I did have it and needed it. Went down to DC. This time frame was like 2004, 2005. So for your listeners who are not familiar, there was a massive issue that happened in the United States around that time with Enron and Tyco. And what ended up happening, some of the fallout from that was that the big four accounting firms could not also be doing professional services work, and they ended up splintering out. And there was a company called Bearing Point, which is bankrupt now, that was the spinoff of KPMG Consulting. So essentially, there was the accounting arm, and then Bearing Point was the consulting arm. And they had a bunch of contracts and everything, and I ended up scooping into there and moved. And that was a big decision, too, because I was dating my girlfriend, who became my wife. Okay, so like I'm not just some romantic here. But, you know, when you're 22, 23, 24, whatever, like moving away is kind of a big deal and can kind of terminate relationships. But I said, listen, I need to do this. This is a huge opportunity. Working for the Marine Corps at the time, building software, lots of opportunity and a huge pay raise and stuff like that. So that's how I ended up breaking in, quote unquote, the defense industrial base. I did not need a clearance at that particular time. I do end up getting one later when I start doing work again with the Marine Corps, ironically, but in a different capacity.
Well, that's really interesting to hear, because the biggest question or answer from myself when you're trying to break into this space, you need to follow where the demand is for talent and you need to be okay and flexible with some of those requirements. That's also interesting to hear that you broke into this space not needing a clearance and eventually got one, because that's the other thing I say. Like, if you're a candidate looking for work in the cleared space, don't go after the top secret some sensitive compartmented information jobs. Like, try to get your foot in the door a different way. So it sounds like that's kind of what you did.
Yeah, it's 100% what I did. And again, I was really fortunate because I was a software developer and got in and got work that way through. Basically, there's probably still a lot of software jobs. I mostly help people get cyber work, but there's probably still a lot of software jobs because the project that I got brought onto was basically like a revitalization transformation project, right? You've got all this old tech from the 70s. The Marine Corps, in this case, had become dependent on that technology and the services it provided, the capability it allowed, but it wasn't really scalable. It didn't really age well. So they were basically rebuilding a new solution based on the existing needs of that current solution. And that type of work's never going to go anywhere because there's all sorts of homegrown solutions. There's all sorts of like tech that's from companies that have gone out of business or been acquired or merged or whatever. And there's no support for it. And, you know, there's only so much duct tape and bubble gum you can put on something before you really need to like tear it down and build anew.
Like you said, you kind of focus on cyber now and you have a ton of content on this. But this is a question I literally get, if not every day, definitely weekly. So how can listeners break into the cyber field with no experience? And here, I'd really like to get some tactical tips. Like I said, I get this question, if not every day, weekly.
I'll give you like the juice right now, right? So number one, if you allow me, Katie, like the opportunity to go a little bit deeper on this one, I would like to give you kind of like three actionable tips that are at the macro level. And then I want to give you three actionable tips at the micro level. Okay. So none of this is going to be just vague pontificating and you're like, what's this guy talking about? Okay. So at the macro level, the very first thing you need to do is you have to have some background on IT, right? Like not every role is IT focused, but like if you don't know how two computers talk to each other, i.e. networking, you can't possibly understand how a machine could get compromised or how a threat actor can move around an environment. Like you just need it, right? And then operating systems, and you don't have to be like a computer science grad level operating systems, but you do need to understand like how a computer works. Like when you launch an application on your computer, like you're in user land, but it needs to access hardware underneath, like the memory and the processor. Like how's that magic happening? Like if you don't understand that at that level, you're going to have a tough time. So like, I would just say like, you have to understand tech somewhat before you can really enter into cyber. Second of all, at the macro level, saying you want to work in cybersecurity, and again, I'm very supportive. I'm very inclusive. I do not throw shade at people because they're asking because they don't know. But when you say I want to work in cybersecurity, what do I do? That's like saying I want to work in science. What do I do? It's like the path for rocket engineer and the path for marine biologist, they'll never ever intersect. You need to like go a little bit further and say, like, what do you want to do in cybersecurity? And a lot of the skills are transferable and matrixable. So don't feel like you're going down the marine biology path and all of a sudden you're going to realize, oh man, I should have been a brain surgeon. That's my calling, but I'm screwed. I got to start over. Like you can pivot around. So those are kind of like the macro level things that I would want to say. Well, and networking within the community. Okay. So now micro level things, as far as like, what can you do today to help you get better for the, like the networking and stuff like that? There's a tool that's free to download. And if you have to bleep this out or whatever, that's fine. But like, it's called Cisco Packet Tracer. It's from Cisco. You literally download it. There are basic entry level like labs that you can walk through with it. You build little networks, you move packets back and forth. It's not a perfect solution. It isn't a robust enterprise grade tool. But what it is it's a very hands-on way to understand how networks work. So Packet Tracer, go check that out. Okay. Second item, you need practical skills, right? I have 4 higher ed degrees, right? I'll be the first one to tell you like, yes, it's for me, I'm a lifelong learner, super awesome. I'm totally into it, but you can be wildly successful in cybersecurity without degrees. And practical skills are worth so much to employers. It's like significantly more than certs and higher ed education. If you can do the job, if you have hands-on keyboard experience, then you're more likely to be a desirable candidate for those employers and more importantly, stand out among the other candidates in the pool. So you have to get those hands-on skills. So again, depending on what you want to do, depends on what I would encourage you to go follow. But if say you want to do audit work, okay? So audit is a very popular area. That's how I got my cybersecurity break where I needed a clearance and stuff like that. Got to go to the South Pole, Katie, get some of that. With audit, like get an audit framework, right? You can go get CIS 18, which is a very basic standard control set. You can go crazy and get a NIST CSF and map that to NIST 853. I know there's a lot of acronyms here, but long story short, get a spreadsheet and then audit your house, right? Is your home router configured properly? Is your wireless network configured properly? Like, do the work. That's the thing. There's no easy button. You can't hit a shortcut button and be like, ooh, like I got all the skills. Like you literally have to do it. So that's an easy audit way. And then pen testing way, there's a million cyber ranges out there that you can just log into and hack away on things. Tons of walkthroughs to help you on, you know, on YouTube and stuff if you don't know how to do something. I would just say like, take action. Proactivity is hugely valuable. Initiative is hugely valuable. And the final thing I'll say, I know you asked me how to break into the industry, But I really like to be very transparent with people. And anyone can get into cybersecurity. I will be the first one to hold the door for you and welcome you into the community. But you need to know, like, it's not for everybody. And it's not because we're exclusive. It's not because I don't like, you know, your haircut and like, you get out of here. Literally, one of the things that you have to do to be successful in cybersecurity and not be like angry or frustrated, you have to be a lifelong learner. The industry changes so frequently, so quickly. Threat actor motives change, technology stacks change, everything. So like, if you're not staying current, then you're kind of like diminishing and dying on the vine. So, you know, but that's not for everybody. Some people like to shut off their brain at 5 p.m., not think about it over the weekend, and then show up on Monday at 9 a.m. and be like, okay, like, what did I miss? And you don't have time to do that. Like, you've got to stay current, you know? Those are my parting thoughts on that.
I love that. I love that they're tactical tips. And, you know, thanks for the shout out for Cisco. So it sounds like that might also be a really good opportunity if you are vaguely interested in cybersecurity to figure out where to plug yourself in if you are very serious about it. And I love the tips on doing an audit. I always tell people, build your own lab. You need to see if nonprofits need any support, because that's the other part of the application process, or, you know, networking and all that good stuff. Putting in the grind to learn some of these things, but also gaining that experience that you can add to your resume, because especially in the government, as we know, that there are minimum years of requirements that, you know, people are keen on, even if it's maybe not necessary. And so we've been singing this mantra that, especially in the cleared space, but I mean, kind of across, you know, cyber and the commercial or private space as well, that there really just aren't enough candidates to fill the amount of openings we have. And is this really an unqualified candidate issue, or do businesses maybe need to do a better job in aligning themselves with accepting new talent that maybe doesn't have that experience? Like, what are your thoughts on that? Because I know it's kind of a big issue across the US.
Yeah, it really is. It's very complicated. Like, it's definitely not like a, you know, a yes or no answer. So a couple things. One, there's a lot of blame pie to go around. Like, everybody grab a plate and get a fork, because we're all eating this thing. From the employer side, having HR write quals for a job that they don't understand, with all due respect, if they're just pulling from templates and they're copying and pasting or whatever, like, you're going to get these like unicorn job recs that don't map to anything. That's part of the problem. Another part of the problem is, most of these businesses, if we're talking private sector serving the government base, right, they are for-profit entities, okay? So they're looking to put the lowest salaried person into the billet, because the billet's going to pay what the billet's going to pay, right? So like, they're maximizing their margins, but they can only put them in if certain recs are met, right? If you look at the DOD 8570, there's certain certs that you got to get and stuff like that. So they are motivated to hire those individuals if they can get them through the screening process. That's another part of it, right? Like, when the hiring manager who wants to hire an entry-level person, if they can't get to the person because they're being screened out through ATS or through automatic tracking systems or applicant tracking systems or HR who screens them out, this is causing a problem, which, by the way, is why you need to do networking, right? So you find out about jobs and you bypass all those situations. Another thing that gets in there, and this gets back to what I was saying before, there is a misnomer of the term entry level for cybersecurity, because you do require that technical background. A lot of times entry level cyber job is actually like 2 to 3 years IT job. You know what I mean? Like, there's like a step there that is just like assumed you have. And unfortunately, that terminology of entry level is misleading. And unfortunately, it's the one thing, or it's probably one of the number one things that frustrates candidates the most, because they're like, ugh, like, it says entry level, but then it says I need like 3 years of experience. This is messed up. So there's a lot of blame to go around. I will say, though, for me personally, I think audit work is, I'm a huge GRC person. GRC, for those who don't know, is a dimension of information security. There's like offensive, defensive GRC. So for me, audit work is like the base skill of a GRC analyst, which means it's like the most entry level of skills. You don't have to have super technical chops to do it. And because of FISMA, a federal act that requires all federal systems maintain some minimum level of cybersecurity standard, and they need to be independently validated, there is a ton of work for that type of audit work. And I think that that's a phenomenal way. I did that work for like 6 years. It migrated from audit to risk to management. But anyways, I was in that world for 6 years and had amazing opportunity with Booz Allen.
Awesome. So you supported the Marine Corps, but initially doing this audit work. So for, you know, those listening, that sounds like it can be least amount of resistance, I suppose, because it's not easy. You know, it's really not. But let's kind of continue on cyber issues that are affecting the business side. So CMMC, I don't know if anybody's heard it, but the Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification Framework, it helps to assess defense contractors' compliance with cybersecurity requirements just to protect contract data, controlled unclassified information, and also from continued adversarial threats and other cyber attacks. So CMMC has gone through the journey, I suppose, and a lot of people don't really know what's going on, but it's been a hot topic amongst stakeholders and the defense industrial base. So I'd really love to get your thoughts on that and, you know, a few other things like how to prevent a cyber attack, how to find your data leaks before an adversary do. So let's talk about kind of from the business side as opposed to the job seeker side, some of those cyber hot topics today.
Yeah. It's funny. When you said hot topic CMMC, I thought you were going to say hot mess CMMC.
And quite the journey.
yeah. Like, thank God they rebooted it and didn't move forward with the original implementation. So CMMC, from an employer perspective, but this will be beneficial for job seekers if you're still listening. With CMMC, you will need to maintain a minimum level of cybersecurity. So you can't just be YOLO all over the place and focused on closing deals and getting business and just executing work, because the federal government understands that there's a risk exposure here. Essentially, your small business, your large business, whatever, your government contractor business, you're a third party risk to the US government. And you mentioned some other things around protecting information and stuff like that. But like, if a employee of, you know, insert government contractor here, if you right now listening, if your computer gets infected because whatever, it's your work computer and you let your kid use it and they downloaded a free Fortnite skin or something, when you bring that machine onto base and you plug it into the network, your machine's been cleared, but now you're potentially introducing malicious stuff to the environment. But had your machine been CMMC compliant, like the rest of the infrastructure at your government contractor business, then there's some level of assurance that that kind of risk would be mitigated. That's why the government's doing it. And it totally makes sense. You will need somebody on staff to help you with this. You cannot just be like, oh, we're CMMC and just like get, you can't go to Staples and buy an $8 stamp that says CMMC approved and stamp everything. Like, you need to actually do the work. So you're going to need that talent. Also, with CMMC, there's three different tiers, and this is part of like the new version of CMMC, but the lowest tier, which is probably going to impact most small businesses and organizations that aren't super huge or doing super top secret work, they will be able to self-identify or self-assess, which, yes, there's plenty of opportunity for fraud and, you know, misrepresentation and stuff. But if you're holding secret or top secret, or you're working on national security, nuclear secrets, anything like that, you absolutely are going to be independently validated. And based on the outcome of that independent validation is going to determine whether or not you're actually able to bid on contract work. So you literally have a financial motivation to get CMMC right, or you could potentially lose your contracts or be unable to recompete for them starting in 2025. A storm is coming, and you can either spend the next 6 to 8 months building a nice brick fort, or you can wait until the storm comes and just grab a leaf and hope that it doesn't rain on you, but chances are it's going to pour. So I would be mindful to that. You had mentioned cyber attacks, Katie. Like, yes, one of the cool things is CMMC, if you're going to follow that as your minimum security baseline, or frankly, your maximum security baseline, you will be getting cyber risk reduction value from it. This isn't some weird perpendicular thing that doesn't actually serve your business, and it's just like a pencil whipping exercise by the government. This is you introducing controls around access, right? So like multi-factor authentication for your email and sensitive systems. Maybe your email goes through phishing, you know, policy screeners. Maybe you're vetting your staff before they get hired on background and clearances and stuff like that. I haven't looked through, CMMC is not finalized yet, so I don't know the extent of the controls that they're going to require, but the controls that they will require will inevitably, you know, even if you get dragged kicking and screaming, you will inevitably have cyber risk reduction introduced to your business, which is ultimately great for you because you're more likely to not be a victim of a cyber attack. You're more likely not to suffer financial losses from that attack. You're more likely to not be embarrassed or lose a contract because of that, right? So those things are all super valuable. I won't go into, you know, laborious prescriptive detail of the controls you could implement because it would make for boring radio and it would also be not really actionable for everybody. But you did mention finding your own data leaks. There are tools out there. One that I know of, I believe it's a paid service, but I love the CTO of the company. I love the product. It's called ForeTrace, ForeTrace. You can literally like just plug this thing in and it's a cloud-based system, but plug it in and it'll look across all your stuff and tell you if you have secrets exposed. It'll tell you if you have misconfigured systems. Another one that's like gaining like massive traction in the industry is called flare.io. You do have to be screened before you can use these things or else threat actors would sign up and find all the secrets and then exploit them. So you do have to get cleared. But if you're a legitimate, you know, law-abiding citizen, you'll get cleared and you can just use it. Those tools are awesome for finding your data leaks, your data secrets, not just if your business has like an exposed database server open to the internet, but also if your business has had data leaked and then dropped on the dark web. These tools will find that for you and tell you. And, you know, honestly, awareness is like half the battle. Like if you don't know about a problem, you can't even begin to address it. If you know about it, it's still terrible, but at least you have information you can action on.
Sure. Good homework for our listeners. And you know, CMMC, like, even though it is, like you said, a hot mess, it is going to be important, you know, for our industry, but, you know, for any company, really, understanding your cybersecurity posture and strategy is really important.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Clearedcast. Hit the subscribe button and share this episode with your friends and colleagues. For more security clearance updates and national security career advice, subscribe to news.clearancejobs.com. If you have an active clearance, refresh your profile and search Cleared Careers at clearancejobs.com.